Hey guys, how's it going? You've joined us for the Touchline podcast for episode number 20. I'm Rich. We got Brett here again. What's up, Brett?
What's going on, guys?
So this is episode 20, the Ned Grabovoy, the Nedinho Memorial episode. We don't have anyone on the roster who is currently number 20. And I think we're going to run into that more and more as these episodes go on.
Yeah, we might have to change our format.
Yeah, we're going to run out of players, but I guess we'll be okay until we get to Sandoval. Let's see, we're 49, I think.
Sacedo's 50.
Mm.
After that, we run into a little bit of issues.
We need somebody to wear like the number 99.
I think there was somebody at one time that did wear 99.
Well, we'll have to celebrate him when we get to that episode. So today on the pod, you guys are going to be lucky enough to reminisce about the two painful games we had last week against LA and Vancouver. We are going to preview the upcoming Rocky Mountain Cup. Who's it presented by? Is it Mark Miller? Rocky Mountain Cup still? Anyway, Rocky Mountain Cup against Colorado that we're going to play on Sunday here at Rio Tinto. Then we're going to have a few listener questions, touch on the team, some FIFA news, and just other comings and goings of the international world of soccer. So, this is going to be awesome. Last week, we played Wednesday against LA. We lost 1-0. 1-0, as they say. Then we played in Vancouver on Saturday and lost 2-1. I think we can agree that in both cases, we were undone by short lapses in judgment. I think the LA goal stemmed from Olave trying to be Messi for a brief moment, turning the ball over, and then, you know, sliding in the box, which oftentimes causes problems. You know, he had a handball. I don't know. I mean, Dunny was trying to say that, you know, 100% of the time that's a penalty, and it probably is, you know, talking about how the hand was in an unnatural or, you know, away from his body or whatever. I would kind of argue that if I'm going to slide, that's probably where my hand's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that it's not a penalty, but I guess I wanted to argue semantics a little bit. I kind of have a hard time with the rules sometimes about what's natural and unnatural. You know, they always talk about, you know, defenders defending with their arms behind their back, like that's a natural position. I don't ever run with my arms behind my back or tucked in at my sides. Mm-hmm. I don't either defend or, you know, run around with my arms stretched out either. So, now, there should be some sort of happy medium, but if you're going to leave it up to the ref to make a judgment call, then, I mean, you know, there's always going to be room for error.
Yeah.
Again, that's not to say that this wasn't a penalty, because I think it was.
Yeah. In all aspects, it was a penalty. Just by definition of the rule, don't touch the ball with your hands. Ball got touched with hands. I mean, by definition, it is. And it was the right call, even if it was against us.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminded me a little bit of, I'm trying to remember if it was last season or the season before with Nat Borchers when we were playing, I think it was Portland. And he was in the box just trying to clear a ball. There wasn't anybody within probably 20 yards of him. And he just slipped and he put his hand down and the ball rolled into his arm while he was trying to regain his balance, and they called a penalty.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, in that case, is it really, I mean, sure, it hit his arm and whatever, but I don't think that's really the spirit of the rule.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I mean, you'll see it both ways. Get called when, you know, it's not intentional and their hands are in, and other times it's not called when guys swing their arm out and spike the ball like a volleyball.
Yep.
So, what are your thoughts? You know, it has seemed like lately in the last several games, our defenders, center backs and fullbacks, have gotten caught a lot on the ball, turning it over in places that, I mean, you shouldn't be trying to juke the defender or do crazy stuff with it in your own half when you're the last guy.
Yeah. That's actually the huge real problem with this team right now is central defense. And, you know, the Vancouver game, we saw a lot of good things. I mean, he didn't play center defense, but Justin Glad got the start on the outside. Usually for the Monarchs, he'll play down in that center defense position. And so he's a guy you can move all around. And I'm not sure if he'd be a missing piece right now for that center defense because he looked good playing on the outside. But, you know, when we lost Schuler, Vasquez stepped in, and you could tell Vasquez had the experience to be a guy that's standing in there. But when we lost both him and Olave, and even after Olave got carded, when he first got the handball, after that he was kind of playing a little relaxed, I guess. He was trying hard not to foul or try to get a card or anything like that, and at the end of the game he ended up getting the red card. But that center defense is a mess right now. I think that's the one place on this team that our depth after the first three is just shot.
See, I think that what we're kind of being susceptible to, and I don't think that it's just limited to the center backs, I think the fullbacks have had issues with it as well, is just every game it seems like there will be once or twice where they just make the wrong decision. And it's one of those things where I thought for the most part, you know, Mond and Vasquez had a good game against Vancouver. I thought that they handled the speedy forwards pretty well. You know, they didn't make a lot of mistakes. It's just the couple mistakes they made were, you know, kind of fatal. And same with Olave is, you know, you're going to get up, you know, a couple times every game where he just amazes you with his awesome, you know, recovery speed or defense. And then there'll be once or twice a game where you're just like, are you serious? Have you been playing soccer long, you know, with some of the decisions that he makes. And so I think a lot of it is just comes down to just decision-making. And I don't know how we improve that. I mean, with Mond and Vasquez, I think experience, right? And Glad, you know, getting in those situations. Like, it'll be interesting to see if Vasquez ever makes that mistake again. He made it in Vancouver about chesting the ball down and then not clearing it out. You know, and if he doesn't, then, you know, obviously he learns, but, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, Vasquez has played a ton of minutes of soccer, but he's only 22, so he's still really young. I think not having, especially in that Vancouver game, there was nobody back there that was that natural leader that they have that you've seen in the past with like Schuler or Olave or Nat Borchers. You're just missing that guy back there. And you could tell Raimondo was getting frustrated a lot during that game, especially with his entire defense as a whole.
Yeah, you saw him being pretty animated, you know, gesticulating towards the different players. Like at halftime, you know, they kind of zoomed in on him and showed him calling a couple players over, like trying to explain how he wanted them to play. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do agree there that, you know, not only are we, you know, do we have probably four people who haven't played a ton together in the back, but you didn't have the one veteran guy to kind of organize everybody besides Raimondo, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, with Tony out for rest, the next guy up is probably Mansali, and even then he's a young guy also. He's only 26, and so after that, you had Mon that was 24, DeMar, I mean Vasquez is 22, Glad's 18. That's a lot of guys with not a whole lot of MLS experience trying to play defense against a Vancouver team who is very underrated.
Yeah, I mean, considering all that, I do think that we played pretty well. I thought, you know, the first little bit in the game, I mean, we just sucked. You know, they were getting all sorts of chances. I thought that Beckerman was really lucky in the first few minutes not to get a penalty called on him. I don't know if you remember that play, but he totally tripped up one of the, I think it was, what was the guy who scored, Teixeira?
Yeah.
No. Anyway, something like that. Anyway, he tripped him up and, you know, the ref, you know, kind of waved play on. But I thought that was another time where we kind of lucked out that, you know, because it could have been called a penalty. But, you know, after we kind of settled down and both teams scored, Javi had that crazy awesome cheat mode curling free kick. And I think once that happened, then we kind of settled down. I thought in the second half, we pretty much played him even. We just had that lapse, you know, for that 1 second.
And, you know, moving away from what our defense was doing, I think in the 4-3-3, when it comes to, like, offensively, I think we were looking the best we have. And all it was is you got a guy like Plata put in there. And I know people will go ahead and say, you know, one player doesn't change this team. But I think that, especially that Vancouver game, allowing him to play that 4-3-3 for the first time, it showed a lot of what Plata changes that entire game. And I hope against Colorado we're able to see Jaime, Plata, and Sabo all together, because I think those three together up top are just going to cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jaime and Plata need to get a lot of rust off still, and kind of recover their form. I've started to get a little bit concerned. I mean, I like Jaime, and I think he does a ton of work defensively and then also just like linking with midfield.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm concerned with Jaime, though, is kind of in the final third or attacking, like he's linking up with the midfield, but a lot of times, like, I don't feel like he's getting in. Either he's not getting in dangerous positions, or they're not finding him when he's in a dangerous position, or whatnot. Like, you know, Plata's all the time making, you know, runs, and, you know, he's getting kind of, you know, in the box with the ball or different things, or Sabo's, you know, getting the ball around the box. And you don't see that a lot with Jaime. You see him getting the ball and either playing it. I mean, he's facilitating sometimes from the side or playing it back to the midfield, but you don't see him making a lot of like incisive plays. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It actually reminded me of one play. He got the ball and he should have shot it. I mean, he didn't have an open shot, but it was something easy. He could have taken a shot and had a nice shot on goal, or, you know, if something happens, he probably could have ended up getting it. But I just remember him, like, he flicked it back, I wanted to say, to Sturzer and let Sturzer take the shot. And I think we're starting to notice with Jaime is his work rate's there. And I don't think he's got that killer mentality that you kind of want from your strikers. He kind of settles for, if he doesn't have that nice open shot, he'll give it off to somebody else and let them do the work for it.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, though, you know, is part of it that he just hasn't scored, and so, you know, he's being extra tentative just because it hasn't been coming. So once he scores, then, you know, it'll all click. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird to see with him. Yeah. I thought him coming in, I said he was the hired gun to help the team out, and now I'm not even sure if he's the hired gun because he doesn't ever pull the trigger.
Right. No, I mean, that's a great, you know, analogy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see him do it more. And, like, you know, maybe once everyone gets kind of back on the same page, you get those three that you mentioned and Morales and everybody kind of clicking, that maybe it'll work. It's hard to say. We likely won't see it for a couple months yet. This Casabo will probably be leaving us here soon. So
everybody's leaving, man.
Yeah.
Everybody. I'm preparing now to go suit up.
We're going to help them fill out the roster.
Yeah. I can play left bench pretty well.
Get the water cups. So this, one last thing, the Vancouver turf looked terrible and not fun to play on. But I guess that's neither here nor there. So this Sunday we play Colorado in the Rocky Mountain Cup. It's an afternoon game, so that should be fun. Apparently they're opening the new pavilion that they've built. You can go before the game, and I think it's like $25 for all you can eat barbecue and drinks and stuff. If you're into that sort of thing.
Party at the Riot.
Yeah, Party at the Riot on a Sunday afternoon. Colorado comes in as the only team in the Western Conference below us, which I guess you could take that as a positive or a negative that we only have one team below us. But they've pretty much been – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I wouldn't get worried about the standings right now. I mean, legitimately, you are sitting 6 points away from second place. In 2 weeks, you could be a second place team.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was a huge thing. I was fighting with fans on Twitter after the Vancouver game. It's got to calm down. It's the West. The West is going to kill each other out. And all you had to do is be the last team standing. Right now, you're sitting 6 points out of second place. You're sitting 9 points out of first place. It's not like you're in the East where you have 8 points and DC has 25. It's 2 weeks change of something. I mean, Sporting Kansas City in with one win went from like eighth place to second place.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's a little more concerning to me is just that, one, we haven't really looked good this season.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to take optimism from something that hasn't really happened yet. And two is because we're going to keep losing players and keep piling on the games for the next couple months. It's hard to see us really getting in a groove when all of our best players are going to be gone.
Yeah.
And so I guess my concern is that it's going to keep kind of going like it is that has been for a couple months. And then, you know, you make it to August and you get everybody back, and even if it starts clicking, I mean, by then, the gap's not 6 points. You know, well, it's something bigger.
In all fairness, I mean, Seattle's going to lose guys. LA's going to lose guys. I mean, everybody's going to lose guys. It's just, can your depth carry you? And that's, I think that's what our test is going to be this year. I mean, even if you look at Colorado, they have 13 points. If we threw them in the East, they'd be contending for a playoff spot.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shows you how crazy the West is. I mean, Colorado is the last place team, and they went into Dallas and trashed them. And Dallas is the third place team. So depth is what's going to be tested, and I'd rather be hot come August than hot right now.
Yeah, no, that's true. I would be curious to see. Seems like every year they do this where they put out a list of all the call-ups for each team. I would be surprised if RSL isn't, if they're not the hardest hit, if, you know, they'd be right near the top. I mean, there's going to be a few teams that, you know, don't even lose anybody. I don't know if Colorado's going to lose anybody. You know, LA, they might only lose, you know, a couple. It depends on if Omar Gonzalez gets called up, because he hasn't been called up for a while now. You know, things like that, and, you know,
yeah, but you have to assume, like, that's just United States that we're kind of looking at. I mean, you have probably Will Johnson leaving Portland. Seattle, who knows, because they get random players called out all the time. Vancouver's built a nice team out of Central and South American teams, and they got the Gold Cup and Copa America coming up. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see. I hope they do another list like they have in the past, just to kind of compare, you know, who everybody's losing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we certainly are going to lose a bunch. So Colorado, I think they only have the two wins, right? They beat Dallas, and then they beat – crap, I just had it in my brain. Who was it?
They beat Dallas, and they beat Vancouver.
Oh, that's right, Vancouver. The other – I mean, they're both totally surprising. You know, they went into Dallas – they hadn't scored a goal in something crazy, you know, like, I don't know, 900 minutes or I don't know what it was, but yeah, they hadn't scored since like the previous year. And then they lay four on Dallas, who had been awesome. Mm-hmm. And then Vancouver comes in and, you know, RSL's experienced them twice of how kind of rough they are. And, you know, they beat them 2-1. So, you know, most, if you look at their games, pretty much all of them are close, you know, like one goal games. So, you know, if RSL is gonna win, you know, they're going to have to either, you know, really turn up the defense to keep Colorado from scoring or figure out a way to break Colorado down, because they've been pretty hard to break down so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot from what I've seen about Colorado is they don't have that ability to score goals, but they are very defensive minded. So they're not going to give you the chances to score on them, but they're not going to try to burn you either.
I think Colorado has a lot of nice pieces. I mean, they have a bunch of players that, you know, as I've watched them play, I mean, I think they're quality players, or, you know, they're going to have potential to be quality players as they've, you know, develop. It just seems like Pablo Mastroianni, their coach, hasn't quite figured out how to organize them or get them to play all together. So, you know, hopefully that continues for us.
Mm-hmm. So, as long as we bring home the trophy, that's all I care about. And this is how you start doing it.
Yeah, it's funny. It used to be for me, like, you know, Colorado was a big kind of, you know, it stirred up a lot of anger and stuff for me toward, you know, towards them. And, you know, I still, you know, not a fan or anything of them, but, mm-hmm. you know, where we, you know, won so many Rocky Mountain Cups in a row, it kind of lost the shine a little bit of hating on them.
Yeah. We're so, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, we won us, well, I think it was 7 in a row, and then last year they finally took it back from us.
They beat us the first two, and then we won from 07 to 2012. They won in 13, and we took it home in 14.
Oh, we did? We got it back last year?
Yeah, we beat them like 8-2 in aggregate.
My years are blurring together. So I thought the 13 year was last year. Man.
All we know is it has a permanent home. It goes on vacation every few years in Colorado.
That's right. You know, it's going to be on ESPN News, which I think is kind of weird. They put it on ESPN News. But Dunny is going to be on the call, so that'll be fun to listen to on TV. I don't know who he's calling it with. But, you know, whoever it is, at least we'll get some awesome phrases like spirit animal is a dump truck or I don't know, snap down header or something good. So, I don't know, any other thoughts on Colorado before we move on?
I wonder if they would like to trade us somebody for, you know, just anybody. I mean, last time we traded with them, that worked out pretty well.
We could give them, I don't even know who I would want on their team.
I'd want Dylan Powers, but that's about it.
But, I mean, would he play, I guess, would he fit into our three-man midfield?
I don't care. I just want a jersey that says Powers on it.
That's awesome. Yeah, they have Marcelo Sarvis on their team, but I think he's still going to be out. He tore his meniscus. Mm-hmm. They have Michael Harrington, so we'll have somebody to boo. Good old Michael Harrington. He's always good for a boo. I'm trying to think who else they picked up that is always fun. I don't know. They've got a whole bunch of players in lately from other teams, but those two stuck out in my mind in particular. So, let's see. We have, what else do we want to touch on? So we have the U20 tournament going on right now in New Zealand. That's where Jordan Allen is. For those of you who haven't kept track, we won our first game against Myanmar 2-1, sorry. I watched that game. I was really surprised, one, how well Myanmar played that game. I mean, You've never heard of them playing a soccer game before. I mean, I never have. So I didn't know what to expect. I thought they played pretty well. And then the U.S. just were terrible, like they had never played together. MLS analyst, what's his name? What's wrong with my brain today? It's totally went blank. Anyway, he sent out a picture, and I had thought about it exactly like before he tweeted it out of there was the four defenders in a row, and then a huge empty space in the midfield, and then six U.S. players along their back line. Like, they were all trying to play striker. It was pretty funny. So
everybody gets to shoot.
Yeah. Everyone's like, just boom it up here. We're going to get it.
It's like a U8 game.
Seriously, it was pretty bad for a lot of the game. But then they came back, played the second. I mean, they won. They came back the second game, played against New Zealand, won 4-0. From the sound of it, I didn't stay up because it started at 1 in the morning, but sound of it, they actually figured out how to play together. Gideon Zelalem, the Arsenal kid, he had a Rabona cross that everyone was drooling over.
You know, it was awesome.
I mean, I watched it, and it was awesome. I don't know. Kind of made me laugh because it was cool, but it almost was like, I mean, it was unnecessary, really. I mean, just doing it to show off. So, I don't know. I'm pouring cold water on the fire there a little bit because I thought it was cool, but kind of stupid that. Anyway, so they've advanced out of their group in the U20 tournament. So they have one more game against Ukraine, but they're already through to the next round. So that's exciting for them. They haven't done it for several tournaments, so that's exciting.
Yeah, makes you feel positive about the team. Yeah. And, you know, United States soccer going forward.
Right, right. We'll have to see how they do in the knockout stages. I mean, I think everyone would probably agree that their group, Ukraine, New Zealand, Myanmar, didn't really inspire fear or anything. I mean, if we didn't advance, it would have been pretty sad. So I think we've at least done what people have expected. Now we'll just have to see who we match up against next. Mm-hmm. Jordan Allen, he did play in the first game. I thought he played all right, I guess. As good as or as poorly as everybody else. He didn't play in the second game. So we'll see if he gets into the third game against Ukraine. But we'll be missing him for at least a little bit longer as they advance to the knockout stages.
Just chill in New Zealand, man. Just hang out.
Yeah, he's going to go to the Shire and see if he can find Frodo while he's there.
Go find Palata's family.
That's right. So we did have one, or I guess two questions. Which one do you want to tackle first? Two listener questions. Should we tackle allocation money first?
Yeah, let's go allocation.
Okay. So we had a listener. Do you remember who it was?
Oh, give me a minute. I'll find it.
It was Jay.
Yes, Jay.
Jay Hyatt 03. He asked us to talk about what we thought RSL had done with their allocation money in the offseason. You know, to strengthen the squad because it seemed, you know, to him that we hadn't really, you know, made very many improvements. Do you want me to have a go first and then you want to chime in or you want to go first?
You can go first because I know exactly what they did with it. So you can go first and I'll kind of just fill in the blanks.
Okay. Brett's over there pouring through the RSL's books, you know, figuring out where all the magical allocation money goes.
It was.
Yeah. Nobody knows how much we have exactly. So that's a funny thing. So allocation money, MLS has this funny magical monopoly money device called allocation money, right?
That nobody's ever seen it printed in paper. Yeah,
exactly. It's like you write it down and people have it, but no money ever actually goes anywhere.
Yep.
So, I mean, you hear it all the time, where a player will get traded to another team and the team, instead of getting a player back, they just get allocation money. Uh-huh. And you can use allocation money for all sorts of things. For those who aren't familiar, a couple of kind of the main things that you can use allocation money for, besides trading it just to get a player, you can use it to buy down salaries. It's especially convenient to use it to prevent players from qualifying as a designated player. I would imagine, since our designated players switched in the offseason of who was considered a designated player, I would assume that a good portion of our designated player, or our allocation money, was used on that. For example, to buy down Hobby's contract. I don't think he's a DP anymore. Or is Beckerman a DP now?
Beckerman is.
Beckerman, Plata, and Jaime. Is that right? Yeah. So I'd assume we'd used it, you know, on Hobby and Sabo's contract probably. Yep. I don't know if we would have needed to use it on Raimondo, for example, to give him some extra money. I don't think he would have qualified as a DP, but you don't know, because that's not when people like the MLS Players Union released the contracts. I don't think any of that allocation money gets factored in. That's why a lot of times players and media, you know, those get released and then people laugh at, you know, what the salaries are listed, because you know that they're making more than that.
Yep.
So, you know, we brought in a few players like Vasquez and DeMar Phillips. Who else did we bring in?
Brought in Elias Vasquez, DeMar Phillips. We brought in... We was able to use it to sign...
We signed Pekka.
Pekka.
And I don't know, I don't remember which of those transfers were free, which of them had fees associated with them. I would assume that Vasquez probably had a fee. Phillips, I want to say he was out of contract. He might have been a free.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But... When you pay other teams a transfer fee for a player, I mean, you have to pay them real money. Yep. You don't get to use pretend allocation money, but you can use your pretend allocation money to reduce that fee on your salary cap, if yep. I understand correctly, so that you can, you know, buy down the hit that it would normally cause your cap.
Yeah. And, you know, and paying down a guy like, if they decide in the summer transfer window they want to go out and get Drogba, because he's been talking about wanting to come to MLS, they can turn around and pay down like Beckerman and then go out and get a Drogba.
So he's not a DP anymore. They have rules on exactly how much you can, you know, buy down contracts and stuff, and how much you can, you know, use on a player. I don't know what those rules are exactly, and I'm sure it changes depending on who needs it. If LA needs more, then I'm sure they would change the rule. And, you know, not knowing how much allocation money we have, I mean, what you do know is all the expansion teams. So this year, Orlando and New York City, I did see, oh man, how much was it? They did say how much allocation money those teams get, and it's some crazy amount. I mean, they're just throwing out, you know, like, oh, you want another 50 grand for that player? Sure, or whatever. You know, they're just throwing it out there like, you know, candy. But, you know, we don't know how much allocation money we have or any other team has. You know, I think we got allocation money back for Borchers, and then we sent money back to New York Red Bulls for Olave. I think it was kind of a wash, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. But.
So, I mean, I think based on who we had on the squad, you know, I think Lagerwey while he was here, and then Weibel now that he's the new director. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought they've done fine with the allocation money we have. I mean, we pretty much swapped Olave and Borchers, which I think was fine given that we were hoping that Schuler would stay healthy. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, hasn't happened thus far, but hopefully it'll happen going forward. And, you know, it's hard to really judge them on allocation money usage when we don't know how much they have.
But, I mean, now with the transfer window heating up, that's when the allocation money is going to start coming into effect, because right now you're hearing a lot of Euro back to RSL rumors. You're also hearing a lot of things, like it just broke over Twitter 20 minutes ago, that Orlando's trying to get Dom Dwyer. And so in situations like that, they're going to need allocation money. And if you're a team like RSL that I'm assuming has a lot more than some teams in the league, you can still draft picks and players and stuff like that for allocation money. So sometimes it's better to have it and not need it.
So. Oh, I didn't see that Dom Dwyer thing. Kind of a side note on Dom Dwyer. I don't know if you read the piece on Grantland about Sidney Leroux.
I didn't.
Sidney Leroux. Sorry, Sidney Leroux. It's really good. But anyway, it mentioned that she was playing in Portland, I think.
Okay.
And, you know, her and Dom Dwyer got married. And so she went to them and asked them if they would trade her to Kansas City so that she could be with him. And they got mad at her for asking her that. And so they traded her to like New England or somewhere, like totally like not even close to Kansas City. And I was like, it's kind of a douchey move by by the team.
That's awesome.
So I don't know, man. If I was her, I would have been pissed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the situation obviously, but I read that and was like, holy crap, that would have made me mad. So anyway, back to allocation money. I don't know if there's anything else to say other than, I mean, it looks like we've used it to give other players DP money to keep them happy. And, you know, then took in our current DP players and, you know, bought them down. So they're still making that money, but not counting the same on the cap. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much just MLS giving everybody $100 and you guys and the team sitting there just throwing it back and forth, trying to help each other out. That's all it really is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if we find a player that would really be a difference maker, you know, our DPs are all barely DPs, and we don't have any crazy DPs like David Villa or Bradley or Altidore, any of those guys. You know, if we found somebody like that, Dola Hansen said that, you know, he's willing to splurge that money. I just don't know if, one, there's anybody out there that we want that's worth it, and Messi. Two, you know, well, I mean, not that kind of money.
Okay. I thought he had deeper pockets.
Well, they got to be willing to come here. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo has talked about coming over here, but he's not coming to Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Same with Ibrahimovic. I mean, he wants to come over here, but he's not coming to Salt Lake. So We got to be realistic, guys. I know we all have a complex here in Salt Lake that, you know, Salt Lake is awesome. And it is, you know, and that why wouldn't people want to come here? But there are a lot more soccer stars would want to come here than in other sports like basketball, for example, because a lot of them come from places that are, I guess, more either dangerous or impoverished than Salt Lake. But you know, you're still not going to get the big guys.
Yeah.
So, all right. Other question was on FIFA. Devin, one of our listeners, he wanted us to give the run. Our boy Devin, he wanted us to give the rundown on what's going on with FIFA lately.
All right. So pretty much this is what's going down, and it's going to be years ago. But in December of 2010, FIFA goes ahead and awards Russia the 2018 World Cup over England and Qatar the 2022 World Cup over the United States. About 6 months later, a former FIFA executive committee is found guilty of bribery and he's banned from international football activities by life by FIFA. And they say it pretty much cleaned up the corruption, but everybody knew that they were liars. The following year, a former U.S. attorney decides to look into the corrupt allegations, and it's the Garcia report. They go through there, and all they pretty much find out is that that there is corruption going on, but they say there's not enough to really do anything about it. After some more investigation, though, They arrest 14 people, nine of them that are currently FIFA executives in Switzerland, and they pretty much have enough info to put them on selling votes for the 2010 World Cup that was awarded to South Africa, the one for Russia, the one for Qatar. Ladder goes up for re-election, pretty much says it's all going to go down the same way. He ends up getting re-elected. But then days later, which would be today,
Yep.
yeah, June 2nd, he announces his resignation and pretty much says that he's kind of lost control over FIFA and that they need to be restructured and he's not the guy to do it. So, from all the
Yeah.
reports I'm seeing, is his second in charge guy though, is they can link everything up to him being involved. They can't get Sepp Blatter enough evidence on Sepp, but everybody pretty much knows that Sepp's involved.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting thoughts or interesting things from the summary there is, if I remember correctly, in the Garcia report, they had like an independent guy come in and do this investigation, and they once he filed his report, they FIFA came out and kind of gave a summary, and he came out and said that's not what my report says at all, and pretty much kind of quit. Working with FIFA over it, because they misrepresented what he had said, and he had signed an agreement kind of saying that he wouldn't reveal what was in the report. So he couldn't do anything about it, and they were just misconstruing what he had said, so he quit. And then a bunch of the FIFA has an ethics committee, and a bunch of them have quit or stepped down because they've disagreed with things that FIFA has done. The FBI and the IRS and the Department of Justice, they all went in and did the Zurich shakedown at FIFA headquarters, and supposedly the FBI had been investigating a organized crime, some organized crime in Russia or of some sort, and they had stumbled onto some of the FIFA money trails. And, so that their original investigation wasn't intended to go after FIFA, but they were doing another investigation that kind of took them that way. So then they went in and worked with the Swiss government. I guess Switzerland has become more and more, I guess, uneasy with FIFA there. And I guess they're kind of like the NFL, where they've been tax exempt for a long time, and so the Swiss don't like that, and the Swiss have also been kind of loosening their laws regarding, because they've always been the country you go to do banking and stuff and keep it secret, and they're kind of changing some of those laws and loosening it up a little bit. So that's not always the case. We do have an extradition agreement with them, so we can hopefully bring all those guys over to the US. So the reason we have jurisdiction is pretty much if the FBI, IRS, Department of Justice, if they can tie you to the US because you used a US bank or used an internet provider in the US or anything, pretty much bought a slushie one time somewhere.
Yeah, if they can link you to this country, you're done.
Yeah, then we can go after you wherever you are. And as long as we have an extradition agreement with that country, then you're kind of screwed. So, sorry about that. So, for example, one of the Brazilian officials, he supposedly fled back to Brazil because I guess we don't have an extradition agreement with them. So he ran away because he was afraid he was going to get brought in, and if he went home, that he would, at least kind of be safe.
Yeah, and and it's not small money we're talking about. I mean, South Africa, they have the number to at least $10 million in bribes. For Qatar and Russia, there's somewhere between $12 to $15 million in bribes for each World Cup. So it's not small money being thrown around. I think the last I heard is that some guys were paid close to $1 million just to throw their votes.
Right. And I mean, everyone's been celebrating that Sepp stepped down, and obviously that's a big thing. It's hard to know if he's ignorant or like willfully ignorant, or if he's like a huge mastermind, or you know.
Yeah.
You know, everyone thinks that he's super corrupt. You know, he always kind of plays the I'm cleaning this place up and I didn't know anything about it and stuff. I'm sure that canaries are going to start chirping all over the place, you know, with the all these executives trying to avoid jail time. They're going to squeal and, you know, turn on him if he knows anything. But kind of the big thing is there's still tons of people involved with FIFA, and tons of people have been involved in these, you know, bribery, you know, money laundering, all that stuff. And if we want any change, you know, it's going to have to be a lot more than just stepping down.
Yeah, it's pretty much going to have to be overhauled. I think a lot more people is going to have to go down than what's being shown right now.
And if you hear when they announce a new president, if you hear it's the, you know, UEFA president or, you know, an existing FIFA executive that's just going in, then, you know, we all better just start crying, because, I mean, that means that, you know, we're just right back to kind of where we started.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
Well, anything else you got for us? Hopefully we answered everybody's questions.
Yeah. Well, the only small thing I got is we know who we're playing in CONCACAF, and
oh yeah.
We don't know when yet, but we do know that we will be traveling to El Salvador and in Guatemala.
Yep. El Salvador. Municipal and Santa Tecla.
So road trips for everybody.
What's kind of interesting, listening to On Frame this week, they had the goalkeeper for Santa Tecla on. And he was the keeper for the Atlanta Silverbacks when they beat us in the Open Cup.
Okay.
And he also was the goalkeeper for Cal FC, that amateur team that Winalda coached that beat the Timbers.
Gotcha.
So they interviewed him and talked to him a little bit. And so that was kind of fun. You know, he did say that they play on a artificial surface, you know, a turf surface. So, you know, although it's turf, it'll probably be a plus in this case, because, you know, a lot of the grass fields in those Central American countries are just, you know, bumpy or patchy or uneven. And anyway, at least with the turf surface, you'll know you'll have a, you know, pretty good playing surface, even if it's rock hard.
I'm just glad we didn't get thrown with Saprissa.
Yeah, Saprissa has a hard group. They're paired with
W Santos and Santos
Laguna. Yeah, that'll be a rough group. And then the Sounders and the Whitecaps and Olympia, that'll be a tough group.
Yep. I mean,
I could.
Did you watch the broadcast of it, of them doing the draw?
I didn't. Okay.
They were shocked that Vancouver plays in the MLS.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. They kept talking about that. I was like, what?
Yeah, they're like, this team plays in MLS. Did you know that? And it was ridiculous. Every time they talked about it, it was awesome. So, far trip that Seattle's got to go to Vancouver.
Yeah, you know, I would have been disappointed, though, if we would have been in a group with another MLS team. I mean, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a surprise, but it's a tough game, obviously. And that means that one of you isn't going to go on. So it's kind of disappointing that Seattle and Vancouver are in the same group.
Well, the only reason it's set up that way is all the MLS teams was thrown into pot C except for Vancouver. And that was because they were the Canadian champions and they were put in pot A. So
yeah, but it would have been nice if they would have ended up in a different group, not in an MLS group. So
yeah, they should have just put all MLS and all MLS teams in the same pot and don't let them play each other.
Well, I mean, last year, so, you know, we're 0-2 now because, you know, last go around, Montreal and the Red Bulls were in the same group. And, you know, Montreal advanced out of that group. So this time Seattle and Vancouver in the same group. So, you know, we're 0 for 2 so far.
Yeah. So,
but it'll be exciting. We'll find out here. I think they said they got to finish finalizing schedules for the, you know, different Central American team seasons before they announce the dates, but it'll be in August sometime when we'll start with that.
Yep. And from the sounds of it, RSL's still down in Orlando getting all those schedules figured out. So good to find out what happens.
Yep. So next episode, we talked about on Twitter, I don't know if you guys listening saw it or not, we were going to talk about the Mount Rushmore of RSL dislike. You know, who we dislike the most, who we hate the most as an RSL fan. We're going to talk about that this time, but we decided to put it off till next week. So if you guys have any suggestions on who you would put on the Mount Rushmore, who would be your George Washington of hate, then go ahead and shoot us a message or just let us know and we can talk about that next time. You can get me at @Frisbee_Rich on Twitter.
And I'm at @A24Brett or at @Touchline_TBS. And as always, you can get a hold of both of us through Torn by Sports.
Yeah, so give that a thought. See if you come up with, if you want to put Olive Pro on your Mount Rushmore, or if, you know, you really have a dislike for, I don't know, Siggy Colin. Schmidt or Colin, or if for whatever reason, Bradley Wright Phillips just rubs you the wrong way, or I don't know, whoever it is.
Yeah.
You're still angry at Pablo Mastroeni for putting his shirt down his pants. I don't know. Let us know who you think, and we'll talk about that next time, see if we can come up with some people.
It'd be good times.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Again, this is the Touchline Podcast. I'm Rich. Got Brett over there. We'll talk to you next time. Peace out.
Later.